Hopefully everyone is reasonably settled in now on this retreat, getting used to your room, used to your place to sit and have a nice breakfast this morning. And on the first day of any retreat, I always want to go over the method of meditation so you know what you're supposed to be doing here. I left it free for the first few hours just to get people just comfortable. But now I'd like you to put a bit more care into what you do when you sit on the meditation cushion so that you can understand just how to get the best out of this meditation retreat. In general, we talk about the second and third noble truth as guidelines for you in the practice of meditation. You all know those four noble truths, but sometimes we don't put enough effort and contemplation on them. And if you look very carefully, the second noble truth, which the Buddha said, was that if you develop craving for this, craving for that, that you can expect suffering, a lack of happiness, a lack of peace. And you can see that very easily in the way you meditate sometimes. If you're really craving to get something, craving to get results, craving to sit up long, craving to do this, craving to do that, you never get much peace in the mind. And that happiness which comes from meditation, which I talk so much about, is never a friend of yours. And that is the wrong way of meditating. So don't meditate following the second noble truth of craving. Instead, you can meditate following the third noble truth, which the Buddha taught. And the Buddha taught the third noble truth is the way leading to the end of suffering. It's the end of suffering was the third noble truth. And the end of suffering was the abandoning of that craving by following four things. And those four ways of ending craving, first of all, is like giving up. Secondly is relinquishing. Thirdly is freeing. And fourthly is not giving any place where that sort of that craving, that doing, that wanting can get a foothold in your mind. These are the four ways of letting go. And that first way of letting go, chaga, it is in Pali, it's the same word like giving, letting go. Giving up to somebody else, like generosity, that's all the beginnings of this chaga. And I like to explain it as in a way of saying, what you give away is not yours. You're giving away ownership of it. If you give, say, a donation to a charity, you're giving up ownership of something of yours. And this lack of ownership is the deeper meaning of this first way of letting go, which leads to peacefulness. And I'm encouraging you to try this in your meditation. Now when you sit down, that first of all, this body, give it away as if you're giving a donation. Give away this body to the cause of meditation, to the Dhamma, to peace. And what it means is that you don't own this body and you look upon this body as not mine. Really, in truth, this body belongs to nature. It will hurt when it wants to hurt, not when you want it to hurt. You will get a toothache, not at the most convenient time, but in the middle of the night, just about you're about to fall asleep. You get sick at the most inconvenient times, and eventually you'll die when it's incredibly inconvenient. Whatever it is, it doesn't work according to your timetable. But this shows you that this body belongs to nature. So when you're meditating, give this body up to nature. Body, whatever you want to do, go and do it. It's not my concern. When you give up ownership of your body, it means you're no longer concerned about it so much. In the same way as if you give up ownership of your car, you go and sell it to a car yard, or you give it up to the wreckers, or you sell it to somebody else. You're no longer concerned about it anymore. It's not yours. So for the time of this retreat, give your body to nature so you don't have to worry about it at all. Those of you who've got a car, it's in the car park, or it's with your family or your friends, you don't no longer need to be concerned about it. For this retreat, it's not yours. It's interesting that sometimes if we are concerned about the aches and pains in the body, why are we so concerned? It's really because we think we should be. This body is ours. Secondly, when you go to the deeper stages of meditation, when you go to the present moment, awareness, and I call that a deep stage of meditation because if you really get into it, it is very profound. Your past and your future, if they're bothering you in the meditation, they keep on coming up to disturb you, again, just look upon the past and the future as something which you don't own. It doesn't belong to you. Your past, what's happened to you earlier on today, yesterday, the day before, last week, when we take it to be ours, mine, that's when it becomes a huge problem. And that's when we could even be traumatized by it. I have great arguments with therapists who say that if you've had a bad experience in the past, you always have to keep bringing it up and thinking about it. To me, as a meditator who knows the psychology of the mind, just keeping on bringing it up, you're just confirming the ownership of it. This is yours, and it's your problem, and it makes it a problem. And it stops you being able just to let it go and relinquish and be free from it. So certainly in this retreat, what happened in the morning, it's not yours, not mine, nothing to do with me, not my problem. What happened earlier on, before you came on this retreat, earlier on in your life, not mine. What has to happen in the future, when you leave here, that's nothing to do with me either. The future is not mine. This is actually straight from the Buddhist scriptures, where the Buddha said all these things, not me, not mine, not a self. It's the Anatta doctrine of non-self. So here we're disassociating with the past and the future. We're saying these things aren't mine. If you can remember this when you meditate, you're following this third noble truth. Not mine means you let these things go, because they're not your business. Really, how many of you are really concerned with what I did this morning, what I did yesterday, or what I was doing last week? You're not really concerned at all. Why? Because it's none of your business. It's my business, if anything. And so because of that, you don't even think about what I did this morning or what I did yesterday. So why do you concern yourself with what you did yesterday, what you did this morning? What's the difference there? The difference is because you think that's yours. And that's why it bothers you. Whatever is yours will always be a problem. It'll be a burden. Whatever is yours is called baggage. So let go of that baggage. If a thought of the past comes up, or a thought of the future, just say, not mine, nothing to do with me. Because all you really own, if anything, is the present moment. That's the only thing you possess. You only possess it for a moment, and then immediately it's taken away from you and given back to nature. The present moment comes from nature. You have it for a moment, and then it goes back to nature. And it's just like the simile of the wind. If you go outside into the garden and the breeze is felt on your skin, you only know the breeze just when it touches your skin, just for a moment, and then it's gone. Where it comes from, who knows? Where it goes to, who cares? In fact, you can't know where the wind comes from, nor can you discern where it goes to. All you can know is the wind as it passes you. And that's really your only concern. That's all you own, the present moment. So let go of the past and the future by practicing not mine. The same with the thoughts which come up in your mind. The next stage of the meditation, very often when you're meditating, people get obsessed with so many thoughts, thinking backwards and forwards. In fact, you can spend a whole hour or more just thinking, 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 thinking. And meditators, when they begin the practice, have a lot of difficulty silencing that thinking mind. And I've looked at that and wondered, why is that? Why can't we just shut up and be quiet? when in a place like this, in a retreat like this, you don't have anything to think about at all. You don't have to think about your business, whether you think about it or you don't think about it, it's always going to be the same. You don't have to think about your family. Whatever you think about doesn't affect what they're doing. You don't have to think about the dinner or the afterwards, that's all arranged for you. You don't have to think about what you're going to do next, it's all according to the program. You don't have to think about anything. That's why we have a program like this, and that's why we have all the meals, so you don't have to think about anything. But you know what happens when you sort of take away all the reason for thinking? People still think anyway. They can't stop. Why is that? Because we have the idea that these thoughts going through our mind are mine. They're ours, they're my thoughts. What a wonderful thought this was, or what a stupid thought that was. Whatever it is, we think it's ours. When you look at thoughts which run through your mind, also, these aren't me, they're not mine. They're again just like the traffic noise in the background. Nothing to do with me. When you look at them as not mine, it means that the interest in them disappears. The attachment to them disappears. The cause of attachment is always the mine. This is my thing, therefore I'll attach to it. Attachment is a relationship between two things. And very often we just look upon the thing outside. It's only half the relationship. What we're attaching to. You know, my wife, my husband, my children, my car, my body. But what's doing that attachment? What's on this end of that relationship? When a string is tying something, it has to tie two things together. The thing on this side is you. And tying it means mine. This is mine. My thought belongs to me. That's why thinking obsesses the mind and you don't have any freedom from thinking. It's always because mine. And you all know the old joke of when you have lots of thoughts like that and you have a mind, it's called a minefield. It'll blow you up, it'll cause all sorts of injuries to you because that mind is a minefield. And we want to ban all those minds. Now, I was really supporting Princess Di's campaign to ban not just landmines, but your minds as well, and my minds, and everybody's minds, to ban mine. So if we can let go of all those thoughts, through the understanding, these just belong to nature. Where they come from, where they go to, who cares? But they're not mine, they're not important, they're not valuable. When you can do that, you'll find that all the thinking starts to stop. Because that which is generating them, that which is giving them force, the me, the mind, that's taken away. And just like taking away the foundations from the building all crumbles. And all your thoughts start to stop. It's not mine. And whatever else is left in there, the next stage of the meditation becomes watching your breath. And why is it that sometimes, you know the way I teach meditation here, present moment awareness, and then onto the silence, then onto the breath. Why is it that so often when people follow that method of meditation, as soon as they start watching the breath, they get disturbed and uncomfortable? You know the reason why? Is because as soon as they start watching something, they call it my breath, and then they start to control it, rather than just leaving it alone. Once you start watching something, people tend to control it. And because they think it's mine, mine to control. If you're not watching it, when you're actually just being in the present moment or being silent, you're not controlling the breath at all, it flows very smoothly. Same way when you're reading a book or watching the telly, watching the TV, the breath flows effortlessly and naturally according to what the body needs. And if you could only do the same, to be able to watch the breath as if it's not yours, not mine, then you don't interfere with it. You're being objective, you're separating yourself, the observer, from the observed, and you find then the breath flows smoothly. Be careful. This is not mine. And if there's any distractions outside of you, sometimes if somebody makes a noise, they cough or they bang the door or they go to the toilet outside and they flush and you hear it, this is not mine. Nothing to do with me. This sound belongs to nature. Because it's not yours, it's not a problem. And later on, when you get into even more profound states of meditation, when it's time to let the breath and the body go completely, don't get hindered by the fear of letting go. Because that's a stage which I'll talk about later on in the deep stages of meditation. When you've got onto the breath and the breath starts to become very peaceful, very nice, and it starts to disappear, when you really get close to really fine states of meditation, very often fear comes up. Because you're letting go of a lot of things, like the five senses and the body. And why is that fear there? Because you think it's mine. If you realize these five senses, this body is just part of nature, it's not you, it makes it much easier to let it go and just to be an observer who doesn't interfere. So this is the first way of meditating. Whatever it is you're observing, whatever is the focus of your meditation, please remember, this doesn't belong to me. This is not mine. And then it will not be a burden. Things will get still because you are letting go. The second way of practicing letting go from the third noble truth is called freeing. Freedom, this word is mutti. Exactly the same word when a person gets free from jail. And I mentioned this last night, that second way of letting go is like developing the perception of one who's freed from jail. And again, it doesn't mean moving away from where you are. It just means instead of not wanting to be here, developing contentment. That development of contentment is the way to let go. What you're doing here is you're letting go of craving, letting go of wanting to change, letting go of wanting to be this way or that way. So often it's strange in one's meditation. Sometimes you can be sitting here for 45 minutes and you get all sorts of pains and aches in your legs and your backs and goodness knows where else. And then you wonder, how on earth are you going to sit any longer? Because it hurts so much. And then suddenly that something might just arise in you, an idea, a memory of some of the teachings. Let go, let go. And as soon as you do that letting go, immediately you're free of all that pain. Strange how it works, but it happens to quite a few meditators. That, you know, you're in great pain, and then suddenly that you flick a switch somewhere. The switch of letting go. And you're free of all of this. What you've actually done, especially with physical pain, is you've stopped trying to get rid of it. You've stopped trying to run away from it. And instead you've accepted it. You've, as it were, held its hand and become a friend of pain. It's so often that pain lives on our hatred towards it. It becomes our enemy. And the more we hate that pain, the more we dislike that pain, the stronger our enemy becomes. It lives on hate. And if instead of giving pain hatred and ill will, I don't want you pain, get out of here, who do you think you are to come into my body, into my meditation? That just makes it worse and worse and worse. But instead, if we just, as it were, like, befriend our enemy, give it loving kindness. Know what that loving kindness, may all beings be happy and well. No, pain is a being. It comes in and lives a while and eventually passes away and dies, just like any other being in the universe. May all beings be happy and well. May even pain in my body be happy and well. That's actually freeing yourself from the problem. It's letting go of the problem. Instead of feeling confined by the aches and the pains and the sicknesses in the body, you actually feel free, you're actually out of the prison. And you realize that prison has been made of bars of delusion, just no walls of not seeing clearly. And the door has been open all the time, and you haven't bothered to open it and walk out. And this is how we can develop that freedom. When we're in the past and the future, just how often is that just putting us in the jail of all of our problems? You know, when you have all this past and future going through your mind, you don't feel any freedom at all. Because it's like a sentence which you have, like a penance which you have to work out all these things of the past, because it's because of a past act you have to go to jail. When you forgive yourself of the past, you let go of the past, you're free of the past, it's all gone, it's finished with. The same as the future. Why put yourself in the prison of the worries and the plans and concerns about what's going to happen next? Because by putting your mind in the future and the past, you're not able to enjoy the beauty and the freedom of the present moment. So always remember, when you are in the past, when you are worrying about the future, you aren't free at all. In fact, your freedom to enjoy what's happening now has been taken away. When you do get into present moment awareness, you'll understand what I mean by the sense of freedom. It's an easily discernible state of mind which comes with present moment awareness. You're actually free just to enjoy the sound of the birds, just to enjoy the cool of the early morning, just to be able to observe the mist in the early morning or the trees waving in the wind. You're free to see so much. But when you're burdened with the worries and concerns and responsibilities of past and future, you are in a prison. So freedom means freeing yourself from the past and future. And the same as thoughts of a jail which people put themselves in. And those thoughts never giving you a moment of rest, always telling you what to do, just like a tyrant who's always making you go this way and that way. Come on, meditate more. Come and get up earlier in the morning. Come on, sit longer. Come on, do this and do that. That tyrant inside of you is much worse than any boss from hell at work or any dictator. And that soul uses the language of thought, always telling you how hopeless you are, how terrible, how incompetent you are, how stupid you are. Make yourself free from that thinker, that person inside. And sometimes in some people's homes, they have these young teenagers who are always playing this music, and so loud and so disturbing. And sometimes they manage to sort of turn that music off for a while. It's just so peaceful, so wonderful to have some silence. You're free from all that noise of thinking when you get into the silence. So freeing, allow the mind to free, to open up to the silence, to open up to the present moment, and also to open up to the breath. You feel the deeper degree of freedom the more you get into the meditation. And so if you're having any problems somewhere in the meditation, your meditation is not going very deep, it means that you haven't given yourself enough freedom. So remember that word, freedom, freedom, freedom. And the next term in the Third Noble Truth is patinisaga, which is like almost like rejecting. Anything which comes into the mind which disturbs you, just let it go right through and out the other side. Don't keep it. Give it away, relinquish it. The same that sometimes when people come and give the monks things, they might give you a pair of socks. I don't wear socks, I go and give it to somebody else. They may give me sort of a new pair of shoes. I've already got my old thongs, that's good enough. So I go and give it to someone else. They give me a robe, thank you very much, give you a blessing, and I go and give it to another monastery which needs robes much more than I do. This idea of like relinquishing, giving it away. So whatever past or future comes into the mind, allow it to go right through the other side and away. Thank you very much, and you give it away. But don't keep it. You know what it's like sometimes in people's houses, how much stuff you've got? Just in Perth, I give the simile of my mother's mantelpiece. Above the fires in English homes, there's always like a shelf, usually made out of some expensive material like marble or some very expensive wood. And on that shelf you're supposed to put all the knick-knacks and photos and important things which you get when you travel overseas. The first time I went back to see my mother in her home in London, I looked at her mantel shelf and it was just so full of stuff. And I brought her one of these little toy kangaroos, you know, the stuffed fluffy kangaroos from Australia, just as a present. Someone had given me it here. And so she put this kangaroo on the mantel shelf. She had to balance it very carefully so that not many other things would fall off. There's only a small mantel shelf. She still kept on collecting more and more. About 6 years later, I went to see her again, this time with a stuffed koala. And my kangaroo was still on there, just balanced for its life on a lot of papers and photos. And she had so much stuff on her mantel shelf. I said, why didn't you get rid of it so I can put the koala on there? Oh no, I can't get rid of it. This is important. This has all got memories behind it. So this has got sentimental value. And so she would never actually take off anything from her mantel shelf. Anything new which she got would always be put on the old stuff. And so this mantel shelf is an amazing sort of act of balance. How it never fell over, I don't know. Now, I'm sure you've seen mantel shelves or shelves or cupboards like that in your home. And I think you can understand the simile, the metaphor here, of the mantel shelf in your mind. Whenever something new comes in, we tend to collect it and don't allow it to go out the other side. So that's why our mind becomes full with many, many things. Just like a mantel shelf, which has got so many important possessions of sentimental value, wonderful memories of the past, great experiences which bring you so much happiness and joy, one after the other, packed in, and also unhappy memories as well. On my mother's mantel shelf, she also kept her bills as well. They were the unhappy memories. And they were all balanced in there, trying to take up space. And so when you have a mantel shelf like that in your mind, you've got no space at all. And I was telling her, just get rid of all the old stuff, throw it all away. So just put one thing in there. My little koala, just keep it for a week and then go and give it to someone else. Go and give it to a charity or somewhere. But no way would she do that. She's still got all those little animals, which I've brought her from Australia, and lots of other stuff as well. Now in your mind, Patinissaga means like emptying out. Emptying out the mantel shelf so you're not keeping anything. When you don't keep anything, then the present moment has got an opportunity to visit you and say hello. When you're keeping all these old memories of the past, you may have a wonderful meditation, say this morning, and when you're sticking that on your mantel shelf, what a great meditation it was. That's why you can't get any good meditation in your next sitting. Because your mantel shelf is still full with the wonderful meditation you've just had. Or with the awful meditation you've just had. You just had the worst meditation in your whole life just a few moments ago. If you stick that on your mantel shelf, again you've got no space to have a good meditation next. So empty things out. Throw them all away. Everything in your mind, all your history, whether you think you're a good meditator or a bad meditator, a beginner or an expert, whether you think you're smart or you're stupid, whatever you think you are, throw it all out. And have this mind which is completely empty. Just no past, no future, no history. Then you can actually do anything. It's only because at school people said you were stupid. That's why you couldn't do well. Because you kept that criticism on your mantel shelf. Or because you were good. I mean, you had to live up to that, so you couldn't really actually exceed what you're already achieving, because you're keeping that on your mantle shelf. Let go of all of that and clear up this mantle shelf so anything can come up. And as soon as something comes up, someone gives you a beautiful meditation or a bad meditation, sit on the mantle shelf for a few seconds and then give it away. Any thoughts, they arise in a moment, but don't keep them. Thoughts are quite natural to the mind, but the biggest problem in one's meditation is you start thinking about something and that leads to another thought, which leads to another thought. It's called a train of thought, and some of these trains in Western Australia are many kilometres long. Some of the thoughts, the trains of thoughts in people's mind can last a whole hour or longer. So let go of all those thoughts. Allow them to come in. The first thought comes in and goes out the other side. You don't keep it more than a second. And even the breath which comes in, just comes in for a moment, and then you let it go, and it's gone forever. You don't hold on to anything, you don't keep it. This is the third way of letting go, not keeping, having the empty mantle shelf in the mind. And the last way is like not giving all these things a footing, so they can't just even settle on the mind. It's like putting grease on that mantle shelf, like putting Teflon on it. So you put anything on it and it slides away straight away. So whatever happens in the mind, it's not mine. You're freeing, you're getting rid of things. And it's also you're not giving a chance for all these disturbances to come up in the mind. And the way to achieve that, and this is a very important part of the meditation, is to be able to appreciate what it's like when you have let go of things. What it's like to be free. What it's like to have a clean mantle shelf. If you can appreciate the results of these meditations at each stage, if you can really appreciate it, it's so wonderful, it's so valuable, that you wonder why on earth you don't do more of this meditation. When you get into the present moment and you appreciate it, you value it, it's so wonderful just to be free of the past and the future. Once you really value it and enjoy it, that is what stops the past and the future getting a foothold. Because what you enjoy, you won't let go of very easily. If you're having a difficult time, you're not having any enjoyment, then you're giving a foothold for all sorts of things to come up into your mind. Anger, ill will, fantasies, dreaming, sleepiness. All these things can come in because you just want to do anything to get rid of the present moment, just to waste time. So this developing the enjoyment in each state of meditation is crucial so that all these other things can't get a foothold into your mind. In the same way that if you're watching a movie on the television and it's a really wonderful movie, even your partner can't get a foothold in your mind. They come on, it's time for dinner. They can't even get a foothold in your mind because you're not listening. Why don't you listen to anybody when you're watching the TV and it's a great movie? Because you enjoy yourself so much you don't want to be disturbed. In each of these stages of meditation there's a lot of happiness. And if we can only appreciate that happiness in each stage of the meditation, we just will not be able to be disturbed. Once you get into the present moment, it's so wonderful, it's so freeing, it's so comfortable, it's so delightful, you just don't want to go into the past and the future, and everything which happened before just completely vanishes. It's like when I come on retreat, all my monastery's gone. Isn't that wonderful? When a president of the Buddhist Society comes on retreat, all his jobs with the Buddhist Society all vanishes. Isn't it wonderful? When all your business, your concerns, whatever you do in your life, it's all gone. Isn't that nice to be free of all of that work? Isn't it? I hope so, anyway. Unless you're masochists. Workaholics, that's what they are, masochists. They just like pain and suffering. Isn't it wonderful to be free? Have nothing to do? And people pay good money to go on holiday. And this is, they go on holiday and they keep on doing more things. So I was reading an article about Club Mediterranean, Club Med. And all, there's not a moment of the day they're not doing something. Now they're skiing, or they're snorkeling, or they're diving, or they're playing games. In the morning, on the evening, they go to discos and dancing. It's just, they tire the head out of you. And that's supposed to be relaxing. It's just work in a different form. Isn't this wonderful, this retreat here? You've got to do absolutely nothing. There's no snorkeling, there's no tennis being played. Just absolutely nothing to do. Now surely that, isn't that logical that that's what rest is about, doing nothing? So this is, you know, why I keep on saying this is a real club meditation. Yeah. Because you don't have to do anything. Now what we really mean here is that by valuing not doing anything and really enjoying it, then actually it stops all this other activity coming up. If you don't value the silence, really value it, it means you don't care for it. If you don't care for it, it will just disappear. And all these thoughts about the past and the future, they will just come up and they will disturb you. And why are they coming up there? Because you didn't value the present moment which you'd achieved. You weren't really enjoying it. You weren't really paying attention to just how wonderful it is to be on holiday. And even though the holiday period hasn't finished yet, you just go right back off to work. You go into the office just to see. You check your email just to see. You check your message bank just to see. You can see what's happening in your mind when you're meditating. Nice and peaceful, just check the message bank, anything going on there. Go into your office, think about what you're supposed to do. That's wasting the beautiful opportunity to be free in the present moment. You're not valuing where you've come. And you just throw it all away. Only when you value and appreciate these moments can you really start to understand this fourth aspect of the Third Noble Truth. Not giving a foothold for all these disturbances to come into your mind. It's only through appreciation, through valuing, through enjoying what you're doing now, you can close the door to all these other things. In the silence, it's very difficult at first for new meditators to appreciate the beauty of silence. But in all traditions, like silence has always been part of the sacred. When you went into a huge cathedral, one of the beauties of those cathedrals in Europe, in the old days when I was a young man and went into them, was they were just so quiet. They almost resonated with silence and with space. They were huge things. And actually, the last time I went into a cathedral was, I must have been in my early 20s, just before I became a monk. I just was in London and just popped into Westminster Abbey just for a few minutes. Just had nothing to do. And I was really just so disappointed that instead of the silent sanctuary which I'd known earlier on, there was a pipe sermon coming out of the PA system. And there was no silence there anymore. And you actually were told by this unseen voice sort of what to do and where to go and what to believe. And it wasn't celebrating silence anymore. It was just more noise. You might as well go into a disco or a shopping centre or an elevator or something. You see, you went into those places to get away from the noise of London and you just get more noise. But many of the old sanctuaries used to be silent places. Monasteries used to be places of silences. Even churches, you can just go in there when you were young and just sit in the back. You didn't need to be a Christian. You could just be left alone and be silent. Silence was always part of the sacred. And why was it sacred? Just get into that silence and stay with it for a while. And you realize how, you know, it just resonates with something deep within you as being powerful, being awesome, being something which is beyond words, which can't be described or can't be written down. That's what silence means, it's emptiness. And once you come to that silence, just stay with it a while. Just, you know, like, I know it's not a good simile, like at the time of my youth, before I became a monk, like you've got a good wine. You don't sort of drink it down straight away, you just roll it around your tongue for a while just to get all the flavour from it. Or like, then if you've got a hot cross bun this morning, you don't just swallow it straight away, you just roll it around to get the last bit of flavour from it. Because it's not all that often we get hot cross buns in the morning as monks. So make the most out of it. Enjoy it. Enjoy that silence. Roll it around the mind. Get every last bit of flavour out of the silence. Savour it. And if you do so, you'll find out that silence is very sacred and very beautiful. And not really something to be thrown away easily. Once you start valuing that silence and really enjoying it and getting all the bliss out of that silence, thoughts can't come into the mind. They can't get a foothold. It's only when you get bored with the silence, when you can't see anything there, it's just blackness, darkness, dullness. That's where thoughts come from. So when you really enjoy the silence, you really delight in it, beautiful silence, great. At last I don't need to think anymore, just need to be. Instead of talking, I'm listening. That's the other thing with the silence, you're listening to the world, you're listening to your body, you're listening to the inside. You can't be talking and listening at the same time. So when you shut up inside, that's when you can really listen. And when we start talking about mindfulness, really full knowing, it can only be in silence that you can be mindful, really mindful. Listening with everything you've got. And you don't need to give things names. All names are approximations. They're not the real truth of what you're seeing or what you're experiencing. Now you get a pain in the body, you say that's pain or it's hurt or it's an ache. That doesn't describe exactly what you're experiencing. You see a flower, that doesn't explain all the detail and the richness of what you're experiencing. Now you feel beauty. Does that word just really explain everything? So don't listen to the words, because they're just such hopeless approximations. They don't do justice to the reality. So let them go, all those words, all those thoughts. And just feel silently. Just know in that quietness where you don't give things names. Where you're not taking notes in the mind. Where you're not thinking, I must remember this so I can tell someone about it afterwards. Forget all of that. And just go into that silence, that emptiness, and value that. Then other things won't have a chance to get in. When you go to the next stage of the meditation, onto the breath, you're just on one thing, going deep inside. Just to know the breath in every moment, just as it's happening now. And again, that breath, once you start getting into it, becomes so beautiful. That's why in that little book which I wrote, I called it the beautiful breath. When you start to watch the breath in that stage in the meditation, see how quickly you can get on to the beautiful breath. In other words, when you're watching the breath, see how soon you can appreciate just how beautiful it is. How simple it is. Now instead of having to be aware of so many things, you're just aware of one thing. Just this little breath going in this moment. You simplified things so much. Simplicity. Any sounds outside, no need to bother about them. Any feelings in the body, no need to bother about them. Or you're worried about, concerned about, watching, noticing. It's just this part of the breath happening now, in the silence, in the present moment. When you value that breath, when you care for that breath, then that remains and everything else disappears. All the other sensory impingements don't have a foothold. They just can't come in at all. Sometimes when you're watching the breath, It gets so beautiful, so wonderful. You're sitting here, you just don't hear other people as they're coming and going and they're coughing. You don't feel the body, whether it's aching or whether it's not aching, whether it's hot or whether it's cold. You don't feel anything. You've let all of that go. You're just watching this beautiful breath in the moment. And this is where the meditation really starts to show you what's possible. Just so happy just being with one little breath happening now in the silence. Not saying anything, not hearing anything, not feeling the body. Just feeling one breath, and that's all there is in the whole universe for you at that time. That degree of simplicity is bliss. You'll experience that, I'm sure, during this retreat, just when the breath starts to become the dominant feature in the mind. You just feel so happy. Because this is following that third noble truth, the way out of suffering, the way to nibbana, to real happiness. And it surprises people that happiness in this world just lies right here in the moment, in the silence, in the breath, and deep even inside that breath, in the beauty of the mind. It's always been here, it's always been available for one. We've always run away looking for something else. Running away looking for something else. We realize we've had everything we ever wanted. We've always wanted to throw it away and give it away. Giving away what's truly valuable and taking something which isn't all that valuable. So in this meditation, remember those stages. The first stage is present moment awareness. Second stage is silence. The third stage is being aware of the breath. I split those stages up into two. Just being aware of the breath, breathing in, breathing out. And then just increasing that awareness so you see the breath in the very beginning of an in-breath, right to its end, without any interruptions. See it from the beginning of an out-breath, right to its end, without any interruptions. Just like you're watching a finger, moving from left to right, no interruptions. And then from right to left, no interruptions. My gaze always on that finger. The finger being the breath, the gaze mindfulness. So you're watching the breath from the very beginning, right through the whole phase of an in-breath, to the end of an in-breath. Watching it from the beginning of the out-breath, right through to the end of the out-breath. Breath after breath after breath. You can't do that through craving. Craving is holding it tight. You'll just get tense, you get samadhi headache, you won't be able to manage it. And you make this meditation retreat a hell and a torture chamber. Don't hold on tight. Let go instead. Just open up the grasp. And you'll find that when you let go, with valuing what's truly valuable, then you'll find all these things, they will come to you. You don't need to go running after them. Present moment, the past and the future, not mine. I'm being free from these things. I'm content being now. That's the way to get out of the prison, contentment. giving up all these past and futures, emptying my sideboard, and valuing that present moment awareness. And when it comes to the silence, say present moment long enough, silence comes all by itself. You're just watching the present moment and soon there's nothing more to say. There's nothing to think. There's nothing to do inside. You're just experiencing without thinking. When that comes up, value it. And just any thoughts, they're not mine. Empty the sideboard of thoughts. Any thought which comes in, give it away straight away. Don't allow it to linger. And value that silence and it will stay. You don't need to hold silence. You don't need to grasp it. You need to see its value, that's all. Then it stays all by itself, without your effort. Each of the stages of meditation have to be effortless. to be really achieved properly and to be known fully. So it's effortless present moment awareness, effortless silence, effortless being on the breath. A little bit of effort at first, but let go of that effort and just value the beautiful breath, so wonderful, so delicious. And then we see what goes later on as we go deeper in, past the beautiful breath into the mind. So these are the stages of the meditation. This is what you should be doing. Third noble truth. First of all, not mine. These things don't belong to me. So there shouldn't be a problem to you. Secondly, freeing, freedom. Sort of contentment makes you free from jail. And third is, any of these things come in, give them up straight away. Empty your mantle shelf. And fourth, delight. See the value in each of these stages. That way, that the obstacles, they won't get a foothold in your mind. Remember those four different ways of letting go. Remember they counter the craving, the doing, the grasping. Those four ways lead to nibbana. They lead to peace, they lead to bliss, they lead to successful meditation. The craving only leads to samadhi headache. So you should all know what to do. Any questions? Is that quite clear? Yeah?
If silence can physically get drowsiness.
Yeah, when drowsiness comes.
So when there's silence, no light to provoke you,
yeah,
you tend to be even more driving.
Okay. If you can really enjoy the silence, you don't get drowsy. When I was a young monk in Thailand, we used to stay up every quarter moon night. The quarter moons, the half moons, the full moons. Once a week we used to stay up all night, meditating. When it gets to about 1 or 2 o'clock, I started to get very drowsy and very sleepy, and I wanted to go back to bed. But you weren't allowed to go back to bed. And so I started contemplating, so why am I so drowsy now? And I'd only been a monk for about 6 months, 9 months at this time. And I started remembering about a year before then, I used to go to all-night parties. When I went to an all-night party, that when it came to 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, I wasn't tired at all. I was full of energy and bright and cheerful. And sometimes all-night concerts, 1 or 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, you were still full of energy. Why now I am meditating, am I feeling so tired? An insight came very clear, it's because I enjoyed those concerts, I enjoyed those dances, but I wasn't enjoying the meditation. That's why I wanted to go to sleep. So drowsiness, a lot of drowsiness comes because you're not really enjoying what you're doing. I know that a lot of people a lot of the men get really into the soccer, and in Australia the last time there was like a World Cup soccer, because it was over in Europe somewhere, that the soccer was on about 1 or 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. And all these men, they could stay up no problem at all watching the soccer till 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning and go to work the following day. If you get them to meditate to 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, no way. What's the difference? Because soccer is important. Or whatever else you follow. And if it's a really great movie, you have to see. You stay up to all hours of the night. And you won't be tired. Because it's important to you. So when you give meditation importance and value, the drowsiness doesn't come. Especially when you're really enjoying the meditation. So give it more enjoyment.
Okay. And talking about talks, sometimes there may be good talks come to me.
Absolutely. And they're the most dangerous ones.
So
the good thoughts.
If you think, give it up. Whether it's good
thoughts,
bad
thoughts,
neutral
thoughts. Oh, the whole lot, the whole works, yes. Because the best thought of all is no thought.
Silence.
Silence, yeah. That's even better than the good thoughts. It's a very good point there, because this is actually, in one of the suttas, one of the teachings of the Buddha, when I first came across this, again, sometimes when you read the teachings of the Buddha, please, those of you who come to retreats like this, there's great translations being done now of the suttas. Now, in English, it's good English, it's very accurate, and you read these things, and they're eye-openers to you. Now, when you talk about meditation teachers, no one can beat the Buddha. Most people don't even read what the Buddha taught about meditation. They go to other teachers like Ajahn Brahm or someone else. But you should go to the source. I was going to say the horse's mouth, but that would be disrespectful. Very disrespectful. But go right to the source of things. In one of these little teachings, he started talking about the gross, the medium, and the refined obstacles to deep meditation. And he also, above the most refined, he started talking about the lingering obstacle to deep meditation, the most refined of all. You know what that most refined of all was? Good thoughts. Thoughts about the Dhamma. That's the most... if you don't know about this, people get lost and they get to nice meditation and start thinking about the most wonderful thoughts, but you're wasting time. It's just that last little trick to try and stop you letting go. It's as if there's like somebody who's will do anything to stop you getting enlightened. And just about to get enlightened, they give you all the best sweets and cookies. Just a last bribe to make sure you don't let go. So be careful of even those good thoughts, those beautiful thoughts, even the thoughts about enlightenment. You might just about to get into deep meditation, have all these great insights, amazing insights, wonderful insights. Be careful, they're just the sweet cookies to stop you really getting enlightened. So let go of everything, even the good thoughts. That's much better. That's a very good question, because I certainly got lost on this for quite a long time, and many other people get lost on it. You get to such a deep state of meditation, the mind is so bright, and you can think about everything, anything and everything. Your mind is just so clear and powerful, and you get these great insights and understandings, so you think. But instead of allowing the mind to sort of proliferate in that way, just say no, stop, and you get much deeper and you get much better results afterwards.
Reach the pathway, I notice that the breath is just the breath, the breathing is just the breathing. So it has reached a certain strength, so it should go far further. But what is it suddenly when I have reached that state and you're just feeling a bit, just that little delight just pop.
Yeah.
And never go back into it again.
Okay, what one has to do is once the breath starts to get very still, just don't go too fast, stay with the beautiful breath for long periods of time. And the mind wants to go deeper, stop it. The mind wants to go back, stop it. Just stay with the beautiful breath. Because to go to the next stage, when the breath disappears, you have to train the mind to be able to hold on to something very refined, such as the beautiful breath. Just one thing for long periods of time without it moving backwards and forwards, just a beautiful breath. So stay with that and make that breath more and more beautiful, as if you've got a little Buddha statue, you're shining it up even more and more, and so it's more and more bright, more and more beautiful, more and more wonderful. This wonderful breath. Because once the breath disappears, what will be left is the beauty. It's like the Buddha statue disappearing behind me, and all that's left is its shine. If you don't know what that shine is, and if it's not very strong, you can't hold it. Because what does a shine mean without a Buddha statue? But this is close to the experience once all the world disappears and the mind starts to manifest. So it takes a lot of training with a beautiful breath to hold something that refined before you can let go to the next stage and go into something even more refined than a beautiful breath.
But you know where's the clinging coming in?
The clinging is only the clinging to a doer and doing. The delight in the meditation is not clinging at all. If it really is letting go, you become still. You don't move. In the same way that if you are very happy to sit on that spot over there, and you are very content, you wouldn't go anywhere. You'd be so happy just to stay here because you've got all the happiness in the world just sitting on this little cushion. It is discontent which causes movement. Clinging actually causes movement. It doesn't cause being stationary. Letting go is a cause for being still. So as you let go more and more, just the mind stays. It doesn't go anywhere. So you don't need to do anything. Don't keep doing. Just stop. Shut up. It all happens all by itself. So you're just sitting here, very still, not doing, so content just to be here with whatever's happening. And all these wonderful stages of meditation, they come to you. As long as you're still and content. Is there any other questions anyone would like to ask about some meditation? I'll quickly mention a few words about walking meditation, because I'll go into walking meditation a bit more in more detail the next time. When we're doing walking meditation, we try and keep it in harmony with the sitting meditation. Find a path, either inside or outside, wherever you feel comfortable. You walk backwards and forwards, like in a line is the best way, somewhere between about 25 paces long, maybe a little bit less, maybe a little bit longer, depending on how you feel comfortable. Either between two trees, or you can take your sandals off and put one sandal at one end of the path, another sandal at the other end of the path. It doesn't have to be 25 paces, it can be less, more, whatever you feel comfortable. When you begin, you start at one end, and remember that this is not just walking to think about this or to kill time, it's meditation. So remind yourself it is meditation, there's something, a task here. Put the attention, put the eyes about 2 meters in front of you. So you're not looking to the left or looking to the right, just a little bit in front of you so you don't bump into things. And then you just start walking. And first of all, the first stage of the walking meditation is present moment awareness. So make that your goal, so when you're walking, you're not thinking about the breakfast which you just had, you're not trying to think how long it is to lunch. No past, no future, in the present moment. First stage of the walking meditation is present moment awareness. When you get to the end of the path, you're just at the end of the path. You're not at the beginning, you're not one step ahead of yourself, you're just where you are. Present moment. Once you develop present moment awareness in the walking meditation, then develop the silence. So you're not thinking when you're walking, but you're listening, you're being, you feel the sensations on your feet against the grass or the carpet fully, because you're not saying anything. So you walk backwards and forwards, present moment, and then silent awareness of the present moment. When you've got silence and present moment awareness in your walking meditation, the next stage is not to go onto the breath. This is where breath meditation, walking meditation diverge. The next stage, instead of watching the breath, watch the movement of the feet. In the same way you can see the in-breath, the out-breath, in-breath, out-breath, you know whether it's your left foot moving or the right foot moving. Left foot or right foot. And you increase that awareness until you see the whole movement of the left foot from the very beginning to its end, until it's flat on the grass or the carpet. And then you notice the beginnings of the right foot moving, from the very beginning to the end. In silence, in present moment. That way the walking meditation is in harmony with the sitting meditation. Just walking backwards and forwards. Present moment awareness, silence, and then just taking one object to be aware of. That's how we do the walking meditation. There's a few variations which I'll talk about later on, but that's just in brief so you know what you're doing when you're walking. Any questions on that? Is that a question or no? Is it good to walk barefoot? It's lovely to walk barefoot because you get much more feeling in the feet. And there are no snakes here. There are no creepy crawlies here. Maybe if you add, you'll be able to see them and step over them. So it's very safe to walk on the bare feet.
In the process of walking, thoughts do come up, do we stop them? And just forget the thoughts, do we stop moving?
Well, you can stop moving if the thought becomes obsessive. But the best thing is actually just to let go of the thought immediately and just carry on with the walking. Again, the present moment awareness is very good to stop a lot of thoughts, because many of the thoughts which go through your mind are all to do with the past and the future. And actually, the present moment is not that much to think about. So as you go closer and closer into the present moment, the mind gets quieter and quieter, and less thoughts come up. Shh. Isn't this nice? Always remember to have a smile on your face when you're meditating or when you're walking meditation. Because if you've got a smile on your face, can you all smile now? That's better. Because that actually psychologically is the mind actually turning towards a happiness. So if you get a lot of thoughts come in your mind, or you get a bit sort of dull, smile. That's a good way of getting rid of drowsiness. Smile. A good way of stopping thoughts. Smile. If you can laugh, that's even better. So you're not allowed to talk, but you're allowed to laugh. Especially at my jokes. Groaning is not allowed. Okay, any other questions before we go off and try these things? Going, going. Okay, gone.